Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. I bet you get 30, 30, I bet you get 30, I bet you get 20, 20, 20, I bet you get 20, 20, I bet you get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month, sold.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
When everyone's on the same page, getting things done at work is easy. No matter what you do or what industry you're in, how you communicate is key. Everything you type is equally important to collaboration, and Grammarly can help. Think of it as your AI writing partner, empowering you to communicate effectively and efficiently so you can make a bigger impact in the workplace. 96% of Grammarly users say it helps them craft more impactful writing. And as the gold standard of responsible AI, Grammarly is your secure AI writing partner that allows your team to make their point and move faster. By understanding your writing in context, Grammarly provides relevant, personalized suggestions. And with tone suggestions, you can navigate even the most difficult work conversations. You can also save time from spending hours editing drafts to just seconds with one click. Sign up and download Grammarly for free at grammarly.com/podcast. That's grammarly.com/podcast. Easier said, done.
Good afternoon, good morning, good evening, wherever you are in the world. I am Russell Tovey.
And I'm Robert Diamond.
And this is Talk Art.
Welcome to Talk Art.
How are you, Rob?
I'm really happy today.
Yeah, why are you intoning that?
Why am I what?
Intoning.
What does that mean?
When you talk with a melodic tone.
Because I'm a melodic human being.
Oh, actually, that's true. You are a melodic human being.
I mean, why did you have to ask that question, Eva?
I don't know, but why are you so good today?
Because we have a really great guest.
Oh, yeah?
Who makes really positive work and art and ceramics and even like stickers and all kinds of things.
Would you say he's a multidisciplinary artist?
Yes, I would.
You would?
Yeah.
Okay, well, that's exciting. Who have we got in the booth then?
Well, I first discovered him thanks to Studio Voltaire, and let's give a shout out to Joe Scotland.
Yo.
Oh, that was really terrifying.
I'm a patron of Studio Voltaire. That's what I was thinking. That's why I came out with Yo-Yo rather
interestingly,
than...
Interestingly, this isn't about your patronage. This is about how great this artist is. So
he's also sort of a patron for them.
Yes, he is, actually.
Thank you.
So you're bringing in that link there.
Thank you.
Full circle. At Freeze Art Fair a number of years ago, I sent you a text and said, what is this amazing artist?
You called me up and said, I've seen these vases and they look like you.
Yeah, they were ceramic vases and they look just like Russell.
Well, why did they look like me? What was the
don't know, maybe
the
they
feature?
Had, maybe they had very large ears.
Protruding.
But it actually just looked like you. It's kind of like a bloke who big ears, and I thought, oh, it looks like
my
you.
My ears
like...
aren't big, they just stick out.
So I sent the photo to you and I said to you, if this is you, I've just bought this. If it's you, you can have it. If it's not you, I'm keeping it. And inside, I really wanted to keep it. And I was like, I really don't want to give this away. Why am I giving this away? I love it. I actually love it.
Mm.
And then I thought maybe it was weird because it looked like you. And then having that in my house is a bit weird.
It was next to your bed and everything, wasn't it?
Yeah, of course. That's the only reason I bought it.
On the pillow next to you.
I went to Freeze Art Fair just to find something to put by my bed. That was the whole objective. I was like, oh, I've come to buy something for my bedside table. So... Then I spoke to the artist online, I think on Instagram or something.
Not on Grindr.
No, not on Grindr.
Okay.
And I said to him, is this Russell Tovey? And he went, no, why do you think that? It's me or it's somebody else or something. And I was like, why do I think that? It looks just like Russell. But then I was like, winning, I get to keep it.
And I don't.
So I've kept it.
Well, I'm angry about that.
So we would like to welcome everybody.
John Booth.
Hiya.
Hi, John.
How are you?
Good. How are you today?
Yeah, really good. Good today.
That's a good thing to hear.
Yeah. I feel quite relaxed.
Do you? Mm. It's springy, isn't it?
Yeah, totally.
Are you quite weather affected at all? Do you have SAD or...?
I don't know if I get SAD, but I like wearing shorts.
Me so,
like,
too.
That definitely puts me in a better mood.
You wouldn't get on with Tom Ford, though.
Does he not like shorts?
Well, I think he likes them if you're going to the beach, maybe. He has, like, very strict rules.
He has rules. Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah. Right.
Tom Ford's like, you cannot wear shorts in the city kind of thing.
Bloody hell.
You can only wear it if you're like sat on a beach.
Unbelievable. So, and you're wearing a coloured striped shirt today, yeah. And colour is your thing.
It is my thing.
That's your grind,
it is,
isn't it?
It is. I don't have the monopoly on it, but it definitely is a big part of what I do.
And actually, that's partly why I was in such a good mood, because when you walked in, you're wearing this amazing... this amazing...
Yeah, well, normally you're like really colourful, Robin. Today you're in like an oatmeal...
Well,
sweater.
I didn't want to like outdo the guest.
Got it.
It's slightly too hot to be wearing this today. I'm actually kind of boiling wearing it. Because you know when you really
feel
want to
free
wear
to strip.
It. I know
feel
I might have
free.
To. But it's actually wool. It was a Mazzoni one that I got in LA recently in a thrift shop.
No way.
Yeah, bit of a bargain.
How much was it?
$70. Total bargain. And
also
Mazzoni's
just timeless.
This is
like,
it.
Yeah, and vintage Missoni is the best. 80s Missoni is amazing.
I'm very worried about moths. I think this is a total
oh,
moth.
Oh, God, my place is a nightmare.
You have to just relax about that, though.
I had Rentokil last year, and I did a whole moth thing, and it cost about $3,000.
And they still fly around me every time.
They
I'm
went, and now the other day, there's whole like moth infestation again. It's an absolute nightmare.
They ruin the nicest stuff. They hunt down the nicest
cashmere,
bit of knitwear
and
go to town on it.
So talking about clothes, this is quite apt. So after I'd bought that, in like October, whatever year it was, and in the December I found myself in Miami. And there I am strolling around the kind of very trendy district where all the like high-end fashion shops had moved into. And I was with Catherine Bernhardt and her child, and we were looking in the window of Fendi. Mm-hmm. And what do I see? I'm like, I recognise that illustration. It looks like my pot. I've got a home by my bedside. And and it was you, because you actually do all kinds of collaborations, including Fendi.
Yeah. Well, you started in fashion, didn't
exactly,
you?
Exactly. So it's funny actually being here, because St. Martin's is just behind
the corner.
I studied there back when it was on Charing Cross Road. Yeah, that was how I started out. I did fashion print at St. Martin's.
Where are you from?
Cumbria. Lake
so
District.
How did you know it being in Cumbria in the Lake District you wanted to get into fashion?
Yeah, it's funny back in the day, this is like 16 years ago, like now everything's different, but my sort of view into that world was ID magazine or Dazed and Confused. But mostly I was into ID, and then once a month I'd have to order it from this really small newsagent in the local town.
Wow.
And I'd always get it late, and then this would be this little like sort of portal into this like world.
That's so interesting.
Not to sort of like romanticize this whole but I was quite rude. It was just rural where I was. There was obviously, I don't think I even had a computer. I didn't have a PC then. It was all very pre.
Yeah, yeah.
It's weird, isn't it? It's kind of unimaginable now.
Yeah.
But it's true though. When we were growing up, magazines were such a kind of
so
portal, weren't they?
Yeah.
Into this other universe.
Yeah, totally.
And it almost made you realize you weren't alone. It's a bit like records as well, like pop music and stuff. That could also connect you. But I think visually, it's so interesting how those photographs or even magazines like Attitude, if you were gay growing up and reading those kind of magazines.
Yeah.
Like,
and buying them terrified. I used to get the shakes
as
bite, and I'd start getting like my adrenaline, and I'd put it on the counter, and I feel like they're going to arrest me.
Yeah.
Spit in my face, and you'd buy Attitude, and you'd leave, and you'd be like, I can read this on my own at home.
And the shopkeeper didn't care. He was
didn't
just like, great, I've sold the magazine.
I've just sold one of these gay magazines.
Yeah, you're pretty much describing my teenage years there.
Yeah.
Different types of magazines. So weird to think of that. But ID was pretty pivotal, and actually I actually brought them all down to London, so over the years I've
stored them. You collected them.
Yeah, it's like I can't get rid of them. Yeah. Like in my house, I've got stacks and stacks of them, really neat, but I can't get rid of them because I almost think it's like a bad luck omen, because I feel like that was how I learnt about all of this.
Yeah.
So it's like, it's pretty important.
I had the same thing. I had a collection of The Face.
Yeah,
that
was obsessed with The Face.
Yeah, that was really good.
And I even had like 80s issues that I bought. Like, I don't know where I bought them.
eBay.
It wouldn't have been eBay because it was pre-eBay. Oh. I think maybe, I know, I used to go to like shops in High Street Ken where they would sell vinyl, and places like Camden Market, and they used to sell old magazines.
Yeah.
And I would get like, you know, an issue from 83 with Madonna on the cover and stuff like that. It was really cool.
Yeah. I think I still think they're important. Like, what I quite like doing is looking at a magazine from 5 years ago or 10 years ago or 15 and then seeing who's around now and what they're doing, and if they're not around.
Designer-wise.
Or even just popular culture in a way, like music, art, fashion, all of that. Because it's quite funny to have a little nosy back and see, okay, they had a moment and now they're not here.
Like, for example, then, so who would you recently have looked at?
I think of examples that I've sort of seen.
It's like the fashion of the 90s you look back at, and it's like now it's coming around again.
You know, Jarvis Cocker was always on the cover of everything.
Yeah.
And he was everywhere.
And Damon Albarn.
And Damon Albarn.
Well, it's the pop,
And then you think about
that was YBA time as well, wasn't it?
Yeah.
That was like,
I'm trying to think of examples. Like even someone like John Richmond, you think he had a really big, but he was big for years.
Right,
and now
fashion,
you don't. Yeah. But I still, you know, it was such a big thing. Or even like Junior Gautier, which now is collectible, but I don't, it's a certain generation, it's like it goes in generations, like a certain generation of my friends, like sort of late 30s onwards, would really like a Junior Gautier thing. But
who's Junior Gautier?
So it was like his sort of, it was Jean-Paul Gaultier's like diffusion line that was like more like cool denim jackets and printed T-shirts. And you wonder, do people starting out now, like 19-year-olds, do they even know about Junior Gautier?
I don't know about that.
Yeah. But I guess these are sort of quite specific examples.
John Richmond went, I remember John Richmond went to Debenhams or House of Fraser.
Right.
Richmond did like a line. I used to get stuff. My mum used to buy me Richmond stuff and I felt really kind of like...
Really?
Got it going on. My mum chose this sweater one year and I was like, I actually... I'm obsessed with this sweater.
I was really into Vivienne Westwood and Anglomania.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like, isn't that the equivalent?
Yeah, it's like that
is that still being made?
I think it is.
I loved it.
I still think it's cool. Yeah, it was all.
And I had this amazing, like, khaki shirt that had sort of almost like rubber buttons and they were quite big.
Yeah, they're brown.
And it was when I was first doing my first ever, like, demos when I was about 14.
I had one of them wide ties that was so literally amazing. Like a massive kipper and it was like a foot wide at the bottom. Love. I used to wear it to, like, screenings and premieres thinking I was all that.
Yeah, it was a thing. I think being a young, you know, late teen, a gay teen, getting the first bit of Vivienne Westwood, I still have a sense of nostalgia towards that because I think there's something really nice about it. But I had a lad in Barrow in Furness, like my local town, who used to cut my hair. He owned a salon called Exhibition, and he, on the front desk, he'd ripped up pages of The Face and ID and pasted all like iconic things on his front desk.
Wow.
So he was quite pivotal to me, and he was like a seriously sort of out there homosexual, like, used to do quite cool things to my hair. And he sort of, I had his hand-me-downs, like, he gave me his old Vivienne Westwood.
Really?
Yeah, and I wore that to, like, my interview at St. Martin's, like, 16 years ago. So it was quite...
Do you know where he is now?
No, I don't. Oh. I don't.
What's his name?
David.
David,
I can't remember his last name.
Oh. Well, it's David who ran Exhibition. I mean, Exhibition's quite a...
Yeah, Exhibition in Barrow and Furness. I'd like to get back in touch with David. He was so funny. Really good
that lad. Sounds like it should be like a TV show. I love this idea of like a hairdresser in that town, like called Exhibition. Such a great name.
Exactly.
I bet he's followed you, you know. I bet he's probably seen your work.
I hope so. I wish I could.
Well, if he's listening, you should write into our Instagram, David.
Yeah. Yes.
You can leave a 5-star review and a comment and then we'll get back to you.
After you've left 5 stars.
So, okay. So then you got the magazines, ID magazines, and then you were like, right, I want to be in the fashion world. So how did you go from being in your town to then getting down to London?
It is that thing of just...
Did you feel like you needed to get to London?
Yeah, definitely. I did apply to other sort of universities like Manchester and Nottingham, which there's nothing wrong with them, but because I'm from the northwest, you know, I wanted, to me it was like the most exotic thing would be to come down to London. I just did an art foundation in my local college and applied to St. Martin's. I came down for an open day and it all felt quite, it did feel quite terrifying actually. Looking back, I was really nervous, but actually it was, I don't know, just I got in, luckily. I think I was pretty lucky. I think as well, like, face-to-face, I think you can... It's nicer to get your point across. Like, I feel like I sort of had a laugh with the lad that interviewed me, and he was mega nice. Who I'm still in touch with, he's called David Capo.
Was he a tutor there? Or was
he was, David Capo. He's still a teacher at St. Martin's, and he was always extremely supportive of my work. I feel like you'd recognise him.
No, I know the name,
actually. He's like,
I remember him from, like, the club scene.
Yeah, totally.
In, like, late... No, maybe, like, early 2000s.
Yeah, for definite.
Yeah.
He's funny. He's a good character.
So how did you get? Oh, like,
no, go on.
So how did you get in? Was it like, did you get a grant or student grant, or did you get like a?
Yeah, it was different back then as well. It was much cheaper, and yeah, I just feel like
you're working class, right?
Yeah, totally. So it was like, but to study back then for 1 year, the tuition fee was £1,200, which at the time I remember thinking that's such a lot of money.
Yeah, a lot of
money. Now it's like £9,000.
Yeah, it's crazy.
So now, but I got a student loan. So well, and then totally, obviously.
You're still paying it off?
100%. Like, I've hardly dented it. Yeah, I have hardly touched it. Like, it's,
yeah, but you don't need to start paying it back for a while, do you?
Yeah, true. But then they take, you know, they suss out how much you're earning and they're starting to take more back.
Right.
But I still owe more than £20,000.
Wow.
Really?
Yeah, because I feel like the interest is actually quite high on it.
Yeah.
It's not good. But I spent that on so many clothes. Like, I bought like Bernard Wilhelm things when I first
did
got
you?
Here.
Yeah,
yeah. Rob's really obsessed. Yeah. Here we go. You're obsessed with him, aren't
he's
you?
He's coming to the opening of the gallery, staying at my house. Like, we're friends. Oh. Like,
is he staying in your bed with my vase next to the bed? Or?
Not in my bed, I don't
you
think.
You could be like a three way.
Yeah.
Stop trying to get in on my...
on Bernard. He's somebody else I really, really like. But I feel like I had that was my thing when I first started St. Martin's. I liked that whole sort of oversized sportswear sort of thing.
Do you like what Kim Jones was doing at the time?
I did, because I used to have some of the stuff he did for Umbro, and I've still got some of that.
Do you good at keeping hold of your clothes?
I do, because I actually don't buy that much, but when I do, it's something that I love, and I would keep it. Sometimes I do that thing where I give it away, like I'd give it away to my mates, because I feel like I'm getting a bit fatter over the years. But it's like, no, it's... But if it's something really special, I'd keep it. I've got a mint green Umbro Kim Jones one that's got like holes in the armpits.
Wow.
With black piping around it, like mint green nylon.
Wow.
It's very nice. And these and sort of track pants that almost have, to me, it looks like the Lancashire Rose. I'm Cumbrian, FYI. But the Lancashire Rose just printed on them. It's really nice.
Wow.
And but I got them because I used to work in Urban Outfitters when I was a student.
Oh, that's
I got a
cool
mega
place.
Discount on that. It was good.
I tried to get a job in Ted Baker.
Right.
And they said I was too spotty when I was a teenager, so they wouldn't give me a job.
That's terrible, isn't it?
Awful.
That would never happen now, would it? You couldn't actually say that to somebody.
I wouldn't. I'm not a spotty. Like... I know.
No, I don't mean that.
Oh. So they would give me a job now. Yes, I hope so.
No, I don't think they would. It'd be like, you're going to cause trouble.
Oh, okay.
You're a troublemaker.
I am a troublemaker.
And they don't want that in
store. So, you studied print design?
Yeah, fashion print.
So and can you explain to people what that actually is? Because we get it, but I don't know.
Yeah, I guess I take that for granted. So it was like where you would specialise in sort of creating a screen print, you know, where you develop an artwork onto a silk screen and print with it. Obviously people do that on paper quite a lot, but we did that on fabric. So you would design prints and everything was done for me anyway. I did everything by hand. And then there's a technique in which you can transfer that onto a screen and then make fabrics. But then with the fabrics, they weren't just screen printed. They could be hand painted or embroidered or anything. So it wasn't just about that print technique. It was about all hand technique.
And then those fabrics then got turned into clothes.
Yeah.
So you would use those fabrics that have been printed and then sewn them up into different shapes.
Like, yeah, very badly made into clothes. Because like, I was much more into the fabric side of things and just being really loose with it. And I find pattern cutting mega hard. And still, I'm not good at it.
That's a whole skill in itself. And so you'd normally work with a pattern cutter, wouldn't you? And then people work with those pattern cutters for decades, don't they?
Absolutely. It's
like you don't work digitally, I read. You don't?
Never. Which, not that I'm anti it, and I really like other people's digital work. Sort of lying, I don't really like digital work at all, but it's just it was so ingrained in me at St. Martin's to just that everything should be from your hand,
crafting
and not in a sort of elitist way. In a way it's much more democratic because you don't need a computer. I didn't have a computer when I was studying, not because I just didn't need one. I never emailed anybody or anything, so it was amazing actually just drawing on paper and drawing ideas. I've still got all my sketchbooks and fabrics that I just sampled on, and it was really nice.
Do you go back to them now for yourself, like when making new things?
Not really, but I do. It's quite fun to look back at pictures of it and think, actually, I'm sometimes quite happy that there's still an essence. So there's an essence. I just apologise to the microphone. There's an essence. There's an essence. Sorry. There's an essence of, I think there's still something that carries through my work. So it's not like I've tried to escape my thing that I was doing at St. Martin's. I just think it's
you can see a style.
I think so. Yeah, ongoing.
So that's interesting because the other day I went to the Fashion Textile Museum, which is located in Bermondsey.
Yeah.
And I noticed, they have a Zandra Rhodes exhibition coming up in September, which I'm really excited about.
What, a retrospective?
Yeah.
I'm not sure if it's a retrospective. I don't know what it is, actually, but it's a solo show anyway. And she's obviously very involved with that space because didn't she help set it up either?
She commissioned that building to be built and she still owns part of it. So she lives on top of it.
Oh, does she live there?
Yeah. And
that's interesting.
Her studio's in there. Yeah,
exactly. That's funny because I thought I'd been there to a party years ago, but with her, and it was like some kind of maybe like
it's,
2008 or something,
it's
like a long time
full
ago.
On.
But that's what maybe that was in her apartment.
Yeah, I used to work for her.
Yeah, well, that's what I wanted to bring up. So when I went round that exhibition, it was all Habitat and Conran themed, and you had all these kind of 1960s clothes that actually had prints on them, and it was very much about the printed fabric, which is what you went on to do.
Yeah.
But she was obviously, Zandra is obviously really involved with all that too.
Yeah.
So can you talk about how you met her and how that all happened?
That was like she's somebody that I really, really like. She's super iconic and she's funny. She's really hilarious.
Yeah.
If you get to hang out with her, she's really, really good. I just applied for an internship there when I was a student because it was sort of mostly linked to the sort of thing that I liked doing.
While you were still studying?
Yeah. So I worked with her for 4 months. It was really, really brilliant. She's a total laugh.
Was it at this place in Bermondsey?
Yeah, so it's in the Fashion Textile Museum. So she, I don't know if she does, I'm pretty sure her studio still is in there. Mm-hmm. So she had the print room in the basement and then her design studio was on the middle floor and then she has the whole top floor. But I think there's a few private, she owns these apartments in there that she rents out.
Oh, that's so cool.
She's got the whole building. Live,
yeah.
Yeah, right, yeah. Right.
So does she follow your career now, do you think?
No, I don't know. We are friends on Instagram, but I'm not in touch with her.
Right.
But I used to live on the bottom of Bermondsey Street and one morning I was walking past and she was on her way into town because she likes walking because she's like notoriously tight with money. She doesn't like paying for stuff. Like,
oh, really?
She'd rather walk in than pay for the bus.
Fair enough.
It's quite amazing. She's quite old school in that way.
It's quite cool though because it's also better for your health.
Yeah, totally.
People forget how easy it is to walk around London, so respect to Zandra.
True, exactly. And we walked into town together. I remember it really well and I feel like I've never had, because the two of us walking together, there's quite a lot of funny looks going on because Zandra's wearing, she had like a big pink, like bright pink jumpsuit on and like she had Crocs on, like, but one orange one, one pink one.
Oh wow.
Which was a look.
Wow.
Yeah, so that was,
and what then was she wearing, do you remember?
Probably just like shorts and t-shirt, but we just got stared at the whole way. Yeah,
I read a really funny story that when you were once cleaning out the bins with her, she was actually wearing like a pink dungarees or something. And you were like even when we're taking the bins out, she looked amazing.
She's a laugh.
Love that.
Really down to earth, because considering her sort of legacy and her heritage and her influence, actually she's pretty formidable.
Well, I wrote to Russ saying we want to interview her because I would love to get her on because, you know, maybe when her show's on in September for whatever season that's going to be.
You should.
But she's wicked.
Yeah. So good.
I know why I met her. I've just remembered. Sorry to talk. I shouldn't be talking this as your interview, but I'm just going to mention this quickly. Andrew Logan.
Right.
So I was doing PR.
The jeweler.
And I was doing PR for him for the Alternative Miss World.
Yeah.
And we had an Alternative Miss World party or something at her studio. Yeah. That's what it was.
They used to hang out because he used to do yoga classes in her penthouse that you go to. I never went to
I forgot about Andrew Logan. I love him.
Yeah. But then I think he's moved. He had a premises near her.
Which was amazing. It was mental inside.
But they got the same architect.
Was it all glass, like mirrored glass?
Yeah, and like loads of weird, like little rooms and things. It was incredible. Yeah.
But he's amazing as well, isn't he?
Yeah.
But also when I was at Zandra's, I heard she would just come out, not in a name-droppy sort of way, but she's been around that long and she knows so many people.
Yeah.
Some of the stories she'd tell you were really good.
Well, there's a soap opera in all of this story,
my God,
isn't there?
Totally.
And the Alternative Miss World thing, that's a documentary that needs to be made if it hasn't been. I think there might have been one a long time ago, but they should do something about that. It's amazing, the Alternative Miss World.
They do it, don't they?
I don't know what that is. What is
it's like basically, you know, Miss World, like the prize, they do an alternative version of it. So it's kind of like drag queens. But beyond that, it's just way more art than that. It's like really high end.
Right.
The costumes people spend.
Do they still do it every year or not?
Not every year, but maybe every other year. And people spend like 3 years making their costumes for one night.
So it's like a ball.
Yeah, but unreal. And Lee Bowery was involved, you know, when he was alive. It was like proper hardcore though.
But Derek Jarman was part of that crew
Derek
as well.
Wasn't
he?
Yeah.
So it's proper cool history.
Did he film it as well then? Or?
I'm not sure if he filmed it, but he was part of that whole Andrew Logan sort of crew back in the day.
Wow.
Quite interesting. But yeah, Zandra, I liked hearing Zandra's stories, and she was sort of on and off friends with Janet Street Porter, so she would sort of slag Janet Street Porter off, but then she'd come round and be like, "Oh, hi, Janet."
Really?
So it was always like, I was always like loving the
drama.
The gossip
here, this. I love Janet. Janet's awesome.
Saint Janet.
She's coming on Talk Art.
Amazing.
Yeah. So how did the whole Fendi thing happen? Going back to that.
Well, let's go back to you graduating. So you came out to St Martin's, and then after St Martin's, where did you go to?
God, I was just so sort of lost because you leave there, but again, it's that whole, this is the problem if there's no digital thing. Like, I had job interviews at companies. I went for a job interview at Burberry, and they sort of almost laughed me out of the studio because they just, the lack of digital work and the lack of sort of technical skill in that way, they couldn't get their head around it. So they did like some of the stuff, but it was quite sobering because I thought, I actually don't know how to, I don't know if I can actually work formally in the fashion industry.
Right.
Because I don't have those sort of formal skills, because it's also quite, it's kind of like highly romantic to come out of art school with lots of like nice drawings of figures and fabrics. But what do you do with that? So actually that took a good few years to think about, like, what do I actually do now?
Wow.
And it did. So I didn't even get a design job for 2 years. I was just sort of...
What did you do?
What, in those 2 years? Yeah. I was working for sort of like these sort of, they're called like, it's like a high street supplier where you do, so it's... just say Topshop, they would ask this company, like, we need 500 mini skirts. So then I worked for a design company that would pattern cut this mini skirt and have it manufactured, like mass produced. So I was learning, I was actually just a skivvy in the studio, like cutting out paper patterns.
Really?
Like, yeah.
Which you struggle with because you don't like doing pattern work.
Yeah, it wasn't great. But then it was quite good to see actually how to do patterns. I still can't do it, but it was quite nice watching somebody else do it. I think I've got a bit more of an appreciation.
Well, it gave you a skill set, I guess.
Yeah. And also just like I needed the money.
Yeah.
And then another lucky thing that happened, I started teaching. So the year after leaving.
Oh, you went back and taught at St. Martin's, yeah. Didn't you? Lecturer there.
Yeah.
Yeah. What did you lecture in?
Fashion illustration at first.
Right.
And then design and textile stuff as well. And I would still do it. I would still carry on working there, but loads of tutors lost their jobs there because there's so many cutbacks.
Oh, wow.
So essentially I lost my job. And I used to teach at Westminster as well on the fashion course.
Oh, it's a good course, that one.
Yeah, really good, yeah. But again, massive cutbacks. So I taught there for 7 years.
Wow.
So fashion illustration.
Yeah.
What's the rules for that? Because you see these figures and then you see the clothes, but...
I guess in my head, there isn't any rules. Like, there is... Obviously, there is formal, like, sort of things that you can apply to drawing to make it look attractive. But I think it's not about... At St. Martin's, it was never us learning about this whole sort of, like, sort of archetypally correct proportions and stuff. It was much more abstract.
Okay.
So I really liked that. But it was definitely founded on observation. So we'd have... It's the opposite of live drawing. So rather than a naked person, it was a clothed person.
Uh-huh.
And then you'd have... The tutor would put loads and loads of clothes on them. So you'd learn, but in quite an abstract way, in quite a fun, almost like... early Galliano sort of loads of layers and textures. It was really, really nice. But that, for me, there might have been some students that wouldn't inform their aesthetic if you were more of a sort of Helmut Lang sort of style where it's like minimal and paired back. But that whole sort of like maximal layered way of drawing informs my aesthetic. So
that Yves Saint Laurent was a big... They've had a retrospective of his fashion illustrations, haven't they? It's a big thing.
Yeah,
people still believe in fashion illustration now. It's like a necessity.
I think so. True. But it's sort of branched out, hasn't it? Because even the Yves Saint Laurent drawings, there's a homoerotic element.
I was just about to say, a whole new part of his work that was never known about. He kept it a secret the whole of his life, of like male nudes. And they are incredible. Nice. They're like so, so, so good. I discovered them when I was in Marrakesh last year, because they've obviously got his museum there.
Yeah, like the Moroccan boys and stuff, and they're sort of quite simplistic drawings of the male form. And it's funny because...
But done in his way that he would do normal
almost
women
like,
and
yeah,
in
quite
fashion.
Simplistic felt tip drawings, but sort of something accurate about them, but almost caricature.
Yeah, they are kind of though.
They're
kind of larger than life.
Yeah, they are. They're almost caricature.
You see personality in them.
It's almost like if you think of Tom of Finland, weirdly.
Yeah.
There's kind of like, it's a more poetic kind of, I don't know, like... theatrical maybe version
softer,
of that
aren't they?
Softer somehow
they're
amazing.
The drawing thing was mega important at St. Martin's, and that's something that I still sort of think about now all the time. I draw every single day, even if it's just like sketching ideas for objects or things or compositions or patterns. Like, it's so ingrained in me, and I still take a lot of pleasure from like different types of like buying stationery. That it's a bit of a buzz. I like buying felt tip pens.
Do you?
Easily pleased.
Well, where do you get your felt tip from?
The Cowan and Wilcox I really like.
Yeah.
Cass Art is good in London. Yeah. It's cheap. But Cowan and Wilcox is good in Shoreditch. I go there for stuff.
I've been there before. It's huge, isn't it?
Yeah, it's cool. A good one. It is good. So the drawing thing, and just like that informs everything that I do now still. So like I was saying, you know, I didn't get a job at Burberry because I can't use a computer, but equally I've got other jobs because I could be in a design meeting and really quickly draft up something by hand. And I've noticed that people really like that, because actually a lot of people couldn't do that now because you're so reliant on the computer.
That's interesting as well. When you think about your ceramics, for example, the shape of them to me almost look like a drawn or painted shape.
It absolutely is.
Which I think is why I loved them so much.
Yes.
Because I think they don't look like ceramic objects other people make.
No.
When you make them, they look like John Booth.
Yeah,
you know what I mean? Which is necessarily from that.
It's nice to hear. It's really nice to hear because I do slab work, so you roll in the clay out, and then the one really useful thing that I did at St. Martin's, like, you know, and back to the job that I did where I was cutting out patterns, anything that you see, I've drawn a paper template and I cut around the paper. So it's almost like sort of like pattern cutting, but with clay. So it's quite, and I do like, so vases, if they've got big flowers coming off them, that starts as a drawing.
It's quite flat pack.
Yeah, exactly. It's almost like modular. You build it up and then but the head, that was just a flat drawing of a head that I scaled up, drew like drew it and then laid it on clay and then cut the clay out and then start building that up.
And why it works so well is because then you paint onto the clay.
Yeah.
So you actually have your painted line as well.
Yeah.
But then, you know, is in synchronization with the shape of your head or...
So it's all been, it all comes from my hand. But that, to be really honest, that's the part that I really like, the sort of decorating part.
Yeah.
You make all of them by hand yourself still.
Yeah. Still, I do have assistants that help me.
And didn't you collaborate with someone in Scotland or somewhere once? Like a foundry or something?
That was like actually the first edition, I think the vase that you got from Voltaire... that a guy made I made an original one,
yeah,
and then he took a cast from it and he did this technique, a press mould. So
you
have the plaster mould and then you press the clay into it, which I quite like because then you can see his finger marks on the inside of the vase. You can see where he's like...
Oh, wow.
So actually, press moulding's quite good. And I do... Some of the new head vases are press moulded.
And then you paint them yourself, though?
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, so they still look...
Yeah.
Yeah.
That, and that's the part that takes... I really enjoy like sort of taking my time with the painting.
Because
if you have to rush it, it's not nice. But if you can just really take your time, I really like it.
And what's that little store near Shoreditch, which had like a ceramics thing? And I think I bought a plate by of like a head
at
Christmas
right.
or something.
I remember
one year.
That. That was my friends from Turning Earth, which was...
Yeah,
which is a sort of ceramic collective. That's where I started out, and then they sort of taught me how to do it. So I did an evening class there. I'm still in touch with all of them. And the guy, Ned, who I met there, he still helps me build.
So they still do evening classes if people want to go and learn how to be a ceramicist.
Turning Earth. It's brilliant.
Yeah. Oh, wow. Good.
So I did that like nearly, I guess, 3.5 years ago. That's how I got into ceramics.
And that was like a night school thing?
Yeah. And it was like pretty affordable, do some classes. I think it was a 10-week course. But I went...
How much is a 10-week course then?
190 quid or something.
Is it?
It's not bad.
Yeah, it's pretty...
Yeah, reasonable. I feel like it was quite reasonable for what the amount you get out of it.
Wow.
Well,
it's changed your whole career, hasn't it?
It actually has started me in a total different trajectory, which I never would have guessed. But to be honest, I went with a bit of an ulterior motive. I thought I wanted to make my drawings into something three-dimensional. Yeah. So I had that in my mind. And then over the weeks, it was like, figured out how I could actually do that.
And do you think there was a reason why you chose ceramics? Because there's been such an explosion in the last kind of 5 years, especially within contemporary art, say, of ceramics being present. Like,
and
I can think of so many artists.
Respect.
Yeah, exactly.
It's sort of gone from unfashionable or a bit, the whole applied arts / craft movement was used to be a bit sort of considered pretty uncool.
Yes.
But I wasn't even thinking of it in that, as deep as that. It was more like I just wanted the physicality of working with, I knew that I could make physical stuff with clay. And it was near my house.
And there is something quite analog as well, a bit
absolutely.
Like drawing for making. So it makes sense to your way your mind works or whatever.
Yeah,
to use your hands in
exactly.
That way.
But at the time, I was living with a florist, but my best mate Adam, who I think you know, Adam Knights.
Yeah.
He's now a florist. You know, he used to do art stuff, didn't he?
Yeah.
He is a florist, and there was constantly vases and vessels in the house, and then I was thinking actually because I really love flowers. I was thinking, what would be the ultimate sort of vessel that I would like to make to have flowers in?
Wow.
So it came from a desire of thinking, actually, I'd like to do that.
And I must say, when you put flowers in those head pots, it's so cool.
It's better, isn't
it? And then
it's
people come around to my flat and they're always like, what is that? I love
amazing.
That. You know, because it's like, it is so unique.
Yeah, it's vibrant.
Yeah, it's nice to hear.
No, it's
it's really
cool.
Nice. And yeah.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous 2-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-? So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
So after you did the lecturing, you did that. And then what was your first venture into fashion?
My first design job was with Ashish. He's like a guy,
really?
London-based. Yeah, yeah, that was my first. And I love it. I think his stuff is amazing.
It's totally amazing.
I love it. So he...
Oh, it's a sequins now.
Yeah.
Oh, that's
sequins.
What Joe Scotland was wearing. I think I've met the Voltaire.
Yes,
yeah,
yes.
So I worked with Ashish for a good few years, on and off. And
that makes sense.
I really loved it. And actually, the first collection I did was the Spring-Summer 2012 collection. And it's all florals. So he'd give me big sheets of paper and I'd just use gouache paints and do patterns. And then these big sort of posters would be sent off to India. And then he'd come back and you'd have like a biker jacket sequined in the floral pattern.
Wow.
It was really amazing. I loved that job.
How long was you there for?
God, they're on and off for about 3 years, really. Just doing, because some seasons were more pattern heavy, some seasons weren't. Or help with research, or just sort of help with general ideas and stuff. It was really nice. But the sort of two main seasons, yeah, spring, summer 2012 and autumn, winter 2012.
And what's that like seeing your sort of designs made into physical clothes?
That's amazing. Ultimately, I still really like that because I'm still doing fashion-related projects.
Yeah.
So I really, really love that. It's also nice to see it in a different format because it can have all the elements that you like on a drawing, but it's in motion and it's on fabric and it has a different sort of feel to it.
Yeah.
But it's the same thing like working with ceramics. It's like a different format. Again, it's a 3D object. It has my mark on it, but you can enjoy it or you experience it in a different way.
And it's interesting with your... When you make prints, I think they work so much better because you've come from a place where you actually understand the whole process. Even if you don't pattern cut yourself, you actually kind of understand fashion because even your ID magazine days, whatever. But I sometimes find it really awkward when fashion brands try to align themselves with artists and then they make a T-shirt or something and it's really lazy and it just looks a bit crap. And then actually the print might have ended up not being very good or something like that. It's just horrible.
It's true.
Whereas I think the fluidity of your lines and stuff it kind of all becomes part of it.
It's true because like when I was at Fendi, like so they were like, oh, we want you to do a bag. So I said, okay, print off the pattern piece for the bag and I'll do the artwork on to scale on an actual piece of paper, because I think that is I definitely learnt good stuff at St.
Martin's. How did that happen with Fendi? How did they find you?
Through Julian Gagneau,
the stylist.
Yeah, so he started there, and then I'd done some projects with him, and because he was at Fantastic Man at the time, and I'd sort of pitched ideas to them, and stuff had, some stuff happened, some stuff didn't. And then he was like, oh, Sylvia wants some drawings to go on T-shirts. Do you want to do it? Or Sylvia Fendi. So that's her.
Oh, right. There is a Fendi person.
That's
right.
Sylvia Fendi. She's really, really nice. Very cool.
And she's like, is that from the lineage of the family? Or is she
Yeah, so it was her mum and her aunties that started that. So five, her mum and her five sisters started Fendi.
And that's the thing about Fendi that's so special, isn't it? It's still family run.
Absolutely.
Then they brought in Lagerfeld, didn't they?
Yeah, exactly. But he'd worked there since the 70s on the women's wear. And then she does the menswear and the accessories. So they're primarily mostly known for their leather goods, aren't they? The bags. So because she designed the Fendi baguette bag, you know, the mini, but super iconic. So she's, you know, they do really well from that. But they're ready to wear stuff. The clothing is really beautifully made.
So they said to you they wanted you to come in and design.
Yeah, just to do some T-shirts. So I started off designing in London, doing drawings, because I used to work from my bedroom on Hackney Road, and I would be designing stuff. Scan it. I didn't even have a scanner, and I had to go to St. Martin's to scan it. And then you'd see it. I think that was when I first got super excited to see it on the catwalk in Milan. I wasn't even in Milan. I hadn't been, but it was really cool to see that drawing. And it was a 5-minute drawing. It was just like a head, you know, and it said Fendi in the speech bubble. Because they didn't even give me much of a brief. They were like, what would you like to do? Like something really basic that just says Fendi. I did a monster's head as well, but they didn't use that. So it was.
Have you used that for anything else?
No, I haven't. No, so I feel like it's
there.
Yeah, I guess so. Yeah, they technically did buy it off me.
How does that work, like money wise, then for something like that?
Yeah, this is where I used to be pretty stupid. So I would, with them, I was so naive. They were like, "Oh, we'll either buy it off you outright, or we can do a royalties thing." But I was pretty skint at the time, so it's like I'm not waiting for a royalty. I just need a fee. So they give me a one-off fee.
Mm. Right.
But that's been their best-selling T-shirt ever. So if I'd have taken a royalty thing, you would have got a lot of money off it, but I'm mega happy. I still get a kick out of it being.
Would you pleased with the original fee?
Yeah.
But
I
also
was,
the bag you made, was that later then? The bag?
Yeah, there was that.
The
was
bag
the,
had a face on it, didn't it?
Yeah,
that was
you had fashion tags, didn't you, and keychains.
Yeah,
and
there was loads. Like that was one season, and then the two seasons after that, I forget what even year it was. Like 2017.
I was going to say it's not that long ago. Years ago, I think.
Yeah, 2 or 3 years ago, and it's that's when I started. So the two seasons after that, I started flying to Rome a lot more and working in their studio. And like I said, they liked it. I brought my drawing kit over and worked in the studio. It was really, really nice.
Mm. Wow! And did you get royalties on the following seasons?
I didn't. I didn't. But I will say that they paid extremely well, to a point where it was like it sort of again. Paid off some debts, got out of my overdraft, bought a mattress, bought a sofa.
Oh, you bought a mattress?
Yeah, I bought some stuff.
Oh, you must have paid a fortune.
It was minted, absolutely minted.
Great. I hope it was pocket sprung.
Mattresses are actually really expensive.
Rock and roll, don't start Rob on mattresses. This is a bad day for Rob.
And amongst other things, I went straight to Prada as well. Blew like so much money in Prada.
Oh, did you?
Yeah, so good. And I said to her, look, I'm sorry, but I did buy Prada things.
That's so funny.
With your Fendi money. What was I like? What?
Yeah, she liked it.
I was about to say, but I don't think anyone doesn't like Prada. I mean, they're like the icons of the fashion world.
It's true. And I like seeing the competition. But I think these big Italian powerhouse companies, they're of interest to me. I think they're pretty cool.
And then you went on to do things like Globetrotter.
Yeah.
Which I loved as well. Didn't you?
Yeah, I really enjoyed that. Exactly. That was really fun. And that was a bit of... It's funny because people see what you do at another company and then they think, oh, I want a bit of that.
Sure.
But then I like the challenge of sort of how do I work for this company and then mix it up so it's not, I don't want to replicate work, but equally I can't change it so much that it's not my work. So it's always a bit of a grey area. It does. And it would always be me sometimes, but with my own, in my own head, I think, is this different enough? But it has to have continuity because otherwise it's not just jumping from one label to the next. Like I also take ownership of that. That work is part of me, and even though if it's with a different company, it's still, I also see it as very much mine.
Because I think when I first saw it with Fendi, I was like, but what happens when you collaborate like that in such a big way? Because it was in all their stores, it was everywhere. So it becomes ubiquitous almost with that one brand.
It's true, it's problematic.
And I started thinking at the time when I first saw it, I was like, oh God, I hope that's not going to like somehow limit you or stop you from doing anything else, because I'm sure all the other brands wouldn't want it. But then suddenly you started doing all these other collaborations, and then what I realised is that you're an artist, therefore you've created a world, like you have your own universe. So what the thing in Fendi is just one tiny part,
exactly,
like almost like a particle of this universe, and that made sense to me when I saw the Matches fashion house you did, which had a bedroom in it, and you can explain that in a minute, but when I saw that I was like, oh yeah, but he's got a whole other thing going on. Like,
true, but then that's where the challenge kicks in, because it's like you could sort of rest on your laurels and be like, oh well, I used to work at Fendi, but it doesn't mean any, like it does mean something creatively, but then it's like, what next? Like, because they moved on pretty quickly from me. I did three seasons and that was fine.
Yeah.
I would have potentially liked to have carried on, but I get why it had to change, because I think if I would have done another season,
it's fashion. Yeah, and fashion's all about the new and the next, isn't it?
Totally. Do you like collaborations?
Absolutely, yeah. Just like the physicality of working with other people as well. Like, I don't necessarily love working by myself in the studio every day.
We've collaborated by proxy, haven't we?
Essentially.
Yes, because you designed for Lou Dalton.
Yes, exactly.
And
I
was like her front man for three seasons. Yeah. And I was wearing your fabrics on her.
Yeah, true. Yeah, that looked nice. That stripy jumper.
Yeah.
Well, that's good.
And there was a scarf you made, and there was a whole video of me putting on your clothes and taking off your clothes.
And amazing socks.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, I gave you the socks.
Yeah. And you lent me a jumper, which I wore one cold day. That was a really boucle kind of heavy.
Oh yeah, that
wool.
Heavy. Yeah.
Amazing.
I forgot about that. Yeah. I really like Lou as well. Yeah,
I love
stuff's
Lou.
Really nice.
She's great. Yeah.
The advert for that was so good. Just of Ross's back of his head with his ears, and then the
your fabrics around
fabric
my neck.
Yeah, tied around his neck.
Yeah, that was good.
Because we'll you did like that. There was a poster size work of like a gouache sort of screen print, which you then took the fabric from. I love that.
Yeah, see, that's so cool. Yeah, it is, and it's really, I'm really lucky to be able to get to collaborate, because then you do what you do and then you get somebody to do the thing that they do, because obviously I like clothing, but I'm not going to oversee the production of a piece of clothing, but somebody else can do that. It's like that, it's like with anything, it's like, it's really nice, same with Globetrotter. I don't know how to make leather goods, but like you go in. It was so fun working with them as well. They were really, really nice. You go in, you draw your version of it, and then you modify it to fit what they can do.
Right.
So it's really interesting. I think more than anything, it's really like, it's just, it keeps you interested because you're learning about different stuff, and even getting out of the studio, going to the Globetrotter factory in Hertfordshire is just nice. Like, it's a nice day.
And for someone like yourself who likes buying crayons, you must love all that stuff, because it's kind of like pouches and like pencil cases, almost passport holders.
Yeah.
I get that. I was like that as a kid.
Yeah, that's a Japanese brand, isn't it, Globetrotter? Did they not like...
It is. I think it is owned by a Japanese company, but they're based... It's sort of seen as a sort of British heritage company in a way, but they use some of the technology. Some of the suitcases are sprayed in the same sort of paint that they use on cars in Japan.
Wow.
And the sort of techniques, you know, they're actually made out of vulcanised paper, which means that it's like so many layers of paper completely compressed together and then sprayed. So they're essentially
that's
made
out... That's why they're
so light. Yeah, right. They're essentially paper. I think that's right.
So at what point did you realise you were an artist, or did you go, okay, I'm multidisciplinary. How'd you say it?
Multidisciplinary. Oh, either.
You say it, John.
Multidisciplinary.
Yes. So you realised you were that, but So at what point did you go, hang on a minute, because I'm an artist now. I'm not just a ceramicist. I'm not just a fabric designer. I'm not just...
Yeah, it's a funny one, isn't it? Because I still have this sort of almost weird embarrassment or shame to be like, oh, I'm an artist. Because I don't know. It's kind of ingrained in me. Coming from a fashion background and then working on pretty much commercial sort of commodity-based things. Mm. It's weird. I don't know. It's almost like I'm almost sort of shy to say it in case another proper artist would be like, you're not an artist. So it's like a weird thing, but I don't lose sleep over it, but no. It's just a funny, but equally I don't like it if somebody's like, oh, John's an illustrator, because I feel like, oh, I'd do more.
Yeah, but
that.
I don't feel like you are an illustrator. No, not that there's anything wrong with being an illustrator, but I've always, that's what I mean though, and that's kind of why I wanted to have you on this show, because I felt like when I saw the thing you did in that house for Matches Fashion, I was like, this
the
is an amazing,
wasn't it?
It was a huge installation in a house, like a whole house on different floors, and that you created a kind of bedroom basically, and I walked through it and I was like, this is such an amazing use of space, and you have a really great installation aesthetic as well, you know what I mean? Like, it was really great.
Thank you, cheers. No, I really enjoyed that, but it's not like I said, it's not like a lose sleep over this whole artist thing.
No,
it's just
course.
It's funny because I do find obviously certain parts of the art world quite elitist, and I do think,
like, what,
like the way in which it exists, the very nature of it, like these pieces of work, whether it's a painting or a sculpture or whatever, I still see it as a commodity that is something that you should be able to buy, but I think the pricing obviously is insane, isn't it? Often when there's stuff that you like a painting for £20,000, it's like, I really like it, but I can't afford that.
I think it's also the smokes and mirrors, the exclusivity.
It's a shame, but I guess that happens in fashion as well, because when it comes, the core of it is like really nice. Generally, people are so like mega nice that work in these design teams and create stuff that they have faith in and that they enjoy doing. And I think it should probably, at the core of the art world, there is that. But then it's all these layers around it, like, you know, the sort of the buyers and the sort of the art fairs and all of these things that make it quite inaccessible in a way.
The psychology of it all is so fascinating, especially it's the same in fashion and in art, the way that they like limit access to things.
Yeah.
So if there's like a really beautiful necklace in a store that you want to buy, you go there and they're like, oh no, that necklace isn't available. Like, we never made that one. That was just on the catwalk and you'll never be able to get it. And then you walk around and you see other people wearing it and you're like,
weird. It's not
this is from personal experience. I won't say which
what
brand.
What necklace was you trying to buy?
I'm not going to say because I was actually really annoyed about it. And they basically just pretend they can't give it to you because they don't want you to have it or something. It's just weird.
That's really bad, isn't it? But that's kind of the exact opposite of how I would ever want to function as a person and professionally as well. I would want stuff to be democratic.
I had that experience. I was trying to get my chair upholstered in Raf Simons Cavdrat fabric.
Yeah.
So I went to the store and I liked the fabric. Then I went to upholsterers. I said, can we order this in? And they said, I know, Raf Simons Cavdrat are really... What's going on? You all right?
Oh, is it?
Oh, are we sitting... Oh, okay. We've just been told that we're sitting on Cavdrat Raf Simons fabric. Oh, well, there we go. That's what I'm telling a story now about how... So I went to the upholsterers and they said, oh, we need to get permission to use this fabric because they're not letting everybody get it. So you might not be able to get this fabric, so you might have to choose something else. And I was like, what? I said, I went in the store and everything. Anyway, I got the fabric. It was fine. I was allowed
it. You were validated.
I was validated by Raf Simons.
They were like, Russell Tovey's allowed to put his bum down.
It's the best fabric ever. But I was like, what? It became really like that.
I didn't know they did that.
Yeah, I was like, okay, cool.
That's horrible hearing that, isn't it? It's just, if you want to buy something, it's weird. I wonder at what point are they, what are they excluding you on? What is it because they don't like the look of you or you're not cool enough? Or...
They just want to know what you're going to use a fabric for, and they want to limit it.
But then I think it's human nature to want something you can't have as well. True. That's why they do it.
Do you think?
And then that will, definitely, and then that will
it's
then
like
make you want it more. And the brand that stopped me from buying a necklace are now doing, what do you call it? Made to measure necklaces. They just invited me to an event. And I was just like, I am not going to that. I mean, I've stopped buying clothes anyway. I'm kind
of
over it.
You stop buying necklaces, Rob.
Well, I have. Okay. I've stopped buying everything. But the thing is, it's just comic that's where they've got to. So they obviously had some marketing plan that was like, we're going to do made to measure things to get more. It's all about money, basically.
Yeah, it's true. No, I get that. It's maybe hypocritical of me to talk about that because I've worked for Fendi and stuff, which are crazy prices. That's annoying. Like, if a t-shirt's £300, like none of my mates can buy it. And people could get quite upset about it, like, not because they can't have it, but they get a bit. I had messages at the time on Instagram, people being like, well, why is it so expensive? But I'm like, I didn't make the price, you know. I didn't choose the price. And
you were doing a job and you need to do that job in order to live.
I mean, get what they're saying. It's almost embarrassingly expensive, but it's like, I don't know.
What do you do?
I know, what do you do? It's a tricky one, isn't it? And also, it's not essential that they have that Fendi t-shirt.
So you're, would you ever imagine yourself having dream of having like a museum show?
I would love that, but it's, again, it's almost that thing of, like sort of developing my work and sort of having time to develop it, because at the minute you get really caught up in doing these collaborations because like, that's how I live. I make a living from that. I've just done a collaboration with Sunspell, so next year,
oh great,
it'll be, it's looking really nice. So, but like, done t-shirts and shirts and like fun stuff with them.
Oh brilliant.
So I'm looking forward to that, but it's, that's how I pay the rent. But I would love time. It's like you need time and space to like to develop something else.
I'd but I think you just need to keep doing what you're doing and it will come to you.
Yeah. Where's your studio?
It's just off Kingsland Road.
And you share that with someone, don't you?
Yeah, there's a few of us. There's technically eight of us in there.
Right. Wow.
So there's some...
Who's your team? Because you were saying earlier there's...
So I... Well, I have recently started a new sort of sideline project with a guy called Ian McIntyre, who's in my studio. He's a sort of an amazing product designer in his own right, and he's got his own really well-known practice. He just reworked the Brown Betty teapot, which...
Oh, yeah.
People are mega into that.
For
people,
him, is it? No.
Me and him did a project with him, but that teapot is a product in its own right, and it keeps popping up everywhere. They've got it in, like, Labour and Weight and, like...
That's where I've seen it, I think, yeah.
Places like that. But so me and him collaborated. So we've started doing cups together, and we did a ceramic table for the Voltaire thing at Matches, which was sort of, I've had an idea about doing ceramic furniture, but I would never have been able to do it without Ian. So he was amazing to work with. And then we thought, okay, we'll give ourselves a proper name. So we're called Supergroup. Sort of a bit of a nod to sort of like postmodern, like Italian, like Super Studio and stuff like
amazing,
that. So a bit tongue-in-cheek.
Yeah.
Because we're not obviously super yet.
Well, what was the Italian Super Studio? Who
they were like, they did these sort of like, like fantastical like semi-architectural drawings that were like pure fantasy, and it has a real sort of, I'll show you, they were really, really cool. They did sort of products and sort of also did like sort of like non-realistic architectural drawings and stuff.
Right.
Or they would make models of interiors that wouldn't, that were impossible to exist, but they're almost, the piece of work becomes the drawing, it becomes the plan.
Is that like Pablo Bronstein sort of creates?
Like, I guess his, does Pablo do sort of fantasy draw? Like,
he does architectural things that can never be really created.
Yeah, I guess
they
it
look
is.
Like they've been...
Yeah, I don't think the aesthetic's quite the same though.
Yeah, because Super Studio was like really futuristic and Pablo's a bit more sort of historical,
yes,
isn't
yes.
it?
Exactly,
but okay,
yeah,
it's a similar thing in terms of sort of...
Concept of it.
Sort of trying to like... suggest architectural knowledge without having any. I don't know if Pablo is, he's not an architect, is he? But he can still draw that. But that's, I think that sort of brings me on to something else. It's quite nice to sort of work in mediums that you don't know anything about.
Yeah.
Because you know, like, then that's what makes it fun. Like, I don't do woodwork. Or the most I can do is saw something. So that's why it was cool to work with Uncommon Projects to do the furniture and sort of let a company sort of make a piece of furniture that I drew and then they make it. So that was...
But also that's how new ideas get created.
Yeah.
And new inventions become, you know, real because you have to bring in different people from different backgrounds.
Exactly. But then that's the thing. So working with Ian on Supergroup...
And that's you've got an Instagram for that, haven't you?
Yes.
You've only got four posts.
Brand new or something, though. It's only been up a month.
It's true. Yeah,
and it's called at Supergroup?
It's called Supergroup Projects.
Okay.
But we're going to see it as an ongoing thing, so we're going to keep collaborating, and we like this idea of inviting other artists or designers to come and work with us.
Wow.
And thinking of...
And create what?
Maybe, like, we're calling it an additions thing, but addition is such a sort of overused and quite loose word at the minute, isn't it? So it's like making
multiples.
Objects. Like, that could be a piece of furniture, could be an ornamental rainbow, which we've made, and a cloud and a flower.
And you were just in Milan for that.
Yeah, so we showed that. We did that in conjunction with Modern Design Review, which are based just around the corner, actually.
Cool.
And Hem, the company. So we sort of designed this sort of, again, sort of post, because we knew we were showing it in Milan, thinking of postmodern Italian design and thinking something quite tongue-in-cheek, doing a rainbow, a ceramic rainbow, which is pretty big, and a flower and a cloud.
Cool.
So, no, it's pretty good. But then the process, even though it looks really sort of fun and light-hearted, they were quite process-heavy. So the flower was... I did a quick sketch of a flower, and we had to pay somebody to, you know, to work, to remodel that flower on a computer for 2 days and then send the drawing off to be modelled in plastic and then... take the mould from the plastic flower. So it's quite technical, even though...
Did that make you then want to go, I need to get digitalised?
No, definitely.
Still no?
Still not. I was like, oh, she can do that. I would pay somebody to do that.
Almost the opposite.
Rather than do that yourself, right?
Because I'd rather just like be able to paint this nice
and
ceramic thing.
Yeah.
No, but it's good. It was really... That's why it's really nice to work with people, because it's amazing to see other people have skills in these amazing... Because I think that was magical. The way she just sort of took a really pretty crap drawing of a flower and turned it into an object. It's quite magic to see, and even considering the scale of it and considering how it has to stand up and stuff, it's pretty technical. Wow. Really nice.
Cool. Congratulations on that. Yeah, we're going to post pictures of those products because I love them. So in every episode, we ask our guests two key questions.
They're tough.
On purpose.
So the first one is, what is your favourite colour?
Oh, yellow.
Oh! Yeah,
that was very decisive.
Yeah, because it's just without doubt. Like, it has to be. Yeah, without doubt. My bedroom's painted yellow. And it's yellow every day, like yellow. I don't actually wear it, but I have such a sort of connection and a feeling to that colour. Like, I'm obsessed with it. Like, I might actually just paint, if my flatmate lets me, I want to paint the living room in just like a deep sort of like Yorkie yellow.
Saffrony. Oh, right.
Yeah, like sort of a bit, like almost a bit like mustardy.
Wow.
You live in a rental place as well, don't you?
Yeah, but the landlord is dead nice, so she let me do the bedroom, yeah. So I think she'll let me do it.
Psychologically, yellow is a calming colour, isn't it?
Well, it's funny because I get mixed sort of reviews on this because some people, my friend Leanne, who's dead funny, she looked into it and she says that colours that you choose for the wall are quite telling, and she said that yellow was most commonly chosen by like psychopaths.
Wow.
To have your room painted. But I just don't think I'm a psychopath, but also it's like it's quite like I actually do find it quite calming and really uplifting. It doesn't evoke anything bad in me. It's the opposite.
Is it on the ceiling as well, or is that
no
white?
That's just white, thankfully. Yeah. But it's I don't know, but then, and actually the most commonly chosen calming colour was a sort of lilac-y colour.
Oh, right.
And that makes sense because that is quite polite, isn't it?
But quite old people's home.
Yeah, I wouldn't go lilac. I actually find that a bit headachey.
Like, yeah, I don't like that.
The colour of a headache, I think, is grey lilac-y. Wow. That makes
sense. Yeah, you're right.
Do you know what I mean? Imagine a grey lilac. I was just looking at a t-shirt then. That's not headache.
Yeah, imagine a grey lilac-y t-shirt.
Person. A grey lilac-y person sat there. Like a headache in a person.
A headache personified. I know some people like that. Yeah,
yes,
but I really love yellow.
Love how decisive that was. That was amazing.
I didn't know you were going to ask that, but yeah, I'm kind of glad you did, yeah.
Our second question is, if you could do an art heist and you could steal any artwork in the world, your touchstone, what would it be?
Oh, that's a tricky one.
And it can be any size. It doesn't have to be like you can fit it in your pocket.
Yeah,
it can literally be anything.
You can take a truck in there.
Like, we will help you.
We will crane it out.
We will crane it out for you.
So it can be massive. Actually, mine is quite a reasonable sized one, and it was a multiple. It was Lilan, you know, those the
sheep.
It's a blue rhinoceros.
Oh wow.
Oh, I've never seen it.
It's extremely, extremely beautiful. It's one of the most beautiful things I haven't seen it in real life. Extremely beautiful. And it was a brass cast in brass and then enameled in blue, and it's sort of almost like a modernist cubist sort of version of a rhinoceros.
Where did you see that?
I've seen it online. You see it on like First Dibs and stuff, but the last one sold for 80,000 euros.
Oh, wow.
It's really, really beautiful.
How big was the edition?
I think it's 80.
Really?
I might have made that up. I might be saying 80 because it was 80,000.
So how much would they have been in the... It was the 60s, wasn't it? The
50s, yeah, I think so. Yeah, I wonder. I guess because it's brass. It has that's expensive in its own right, to have stuff cast in that.
Yeah.
So I'm not sure, you know, but I know it's one thing that I really, really love.
Do you like his sheep?
Yeah, I do like them. I think they're really cute. I like them, and I like the sort of dove seats that he's done and stuff.
They've come back. I started seeing them a lot in like Architectural Digest. They appear a lot in people's collection. Pierre Jeanneret chairs, and then there's a Lalane sheep.
It makes sense because they're sort of timeless, aren't they?
Yeah.
But yeah, the sheep are cool, but I'd
want the rhino. Amazing.
I want the blue rhinoceros.
I think you're going to get that one day.
Soon. We're gonna like positively send this to you.
I think just the way really your trajectory is going, I think it's completely possible that you're going to be able to drop 80,000 euros.
It's going
to
happen.
I would really like that. I would really like that.
Do you mean brass or do you mean bronze?
Oh, bronze, isn't it?
It's bronze, I think. Sorry, I don't think brass is that expensive. Really? Brass?
You're so Cumbrian.
In Cumbria, brass is so expensive.
So it's a bronze one, that makes sense. Yeah,
you're right, thank you for that. It's really beautiful, but it's like the colour of it. And I feel like it's such a powerful object. And it's just got... I imagine the weight of it. I want to lift it. Even if I get to just touch it and then run with it. But there's something really satisfying about it. It's quite like long. It's elongated and just a really beautiful, like powerful object. But the thing is, if you asked me this question next week, it might change.
Yeah, I'm the same. I have one thread, but I do. Yeah, you fetishize different.
I do. And then it totally goes, you know, I don't know. I've been looking a lot. Is it Lily van der Stocker?
Yeah,
love her.
Imagine her.
That's kind of like your work. They're very pink, aren't they?
Exactly. And phallic-y.
I love her wall painting.
They're quite naive. I saw her work at SCAD in Savannah. She had a show there, yeah.
And actually, Valeria Napoleoni, the collector, she had an amazing one in her house for a lot. It might even still be there, like a permanent wall painting. It's incredible. Ooh, wow. So cool to live with
I've seen that. I've been to her house. I've seen that, actually. Mm. I do remember that. But I would love it. Imagine if she could paint a building the outside of one for you. So imagine if you're offering me anything, maybe I get her in with a couple of cans of paint.
Andrew,
so instead of the yellow paint in the living room, you'd have hers, a mural up.
Yeah, I'd be down with that, yeah. I'd give her a wall.
That's really cool.
That's generous of you.
Andrew, who runs Counter Editions, he's the head of printing. He makes all the prints in our new print studio. He made a print with her.
Ooh.
And he got an AP and it's hanging in his house. Oh, and I stayed at his house for the last few nights in Margate. And he's got this really beautiful print. And I was really impressed how good her prints are.
Right.
So if you can't quite reach to getting her to come and paint your outside of your house, you could look into getting a print.
Because
I don't think they're that expensive, actually. And they are beautiful. Yeah, she's really
cool.
Beautiful.
Her work is cool. And actually, I have been looking at it a lot recently. And I bought a book of hers in LA, and I was just looking at not the whole 10-hour flight back, but soaking it up, and I was like, this is amazing.
Wow.
Wicked.
So I was really into that. I really like her. But it could change. I'm trying to think of anything else that...
Who are your other heroes?
Yeah, who's your art heroes?
I really, really love Eduardo Palazzi.
Oh, of course.
Like, I really love it.
I was terrified when the Tottenham Road Station got demolished. I was like, they're not going to put that back, but they have.
I know, exactly. Well, do you remember in the Whitechapel Gallery, there was an exhibition of his, and there was one of the plans on sort of quite, discoloured aged paper, and it had the part with the moth on it. And I think I would actually love I think about that moth all the time, because it's just on such a beautiful angle, and it's just... It's really, really beautiful.
And that was made out of the tiles because he's a mosaic design that was on the underneath.
Yeah, I think that's one of my favourite things ever.
I've seen a cubist style elephant that he made out of bronze.
Because his work did evolve into that sort of quite weird... I didn't love that chapter of his work, I don't think, but I do remember it went sort of almost a bit sort of industrially weird looking.
It did,
Yeah. I really like him.
John Booth, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you. Thanks, it's been lovely.
I've loved hearing you talk. It's been wicked. And I can't wait to see what you do next.
Yes.
Thank you.
Well, what is next for John Booth?
Oh, what is next? I might be doing a book.
So, really?
Yeah, so, but sort of like not aligned with any other product or company or anything, like a book for the pure joy of having this format of me to work with paper and colour and texture and have it as a thing. I don't know what the thing is. It's going to be a thing. So that's what I'm working on next.
Do it. And share it with us.
And dedicated to talk up.
Yeah, thank you. Yeah, done. It's done.
Thank you so much for joining us. Everyone listening, you can check our Instagram @talkart for images of all the things we've spoken about today.
Please like and comment on Apple Podcasts or Acast, Spotify, iTunes, wherever you're listening, your podcast provider, please.
Yeah, leave us a review. And we'll be back very soon with more Talk Art.
Thank you very much,
Thanks for joining us,
Thank
John.
You. Thanks.
Bye.
Cheers.
You've been listening to Talk Art with Robert Diament and Russell Tovey. Follow us on Instagram @talkart, where you can view images of all artworks discussed in this episode. Recorded at Spiritland London by Anthony Shaw and edited by Gareth Isles. Subscribe to Talk Art on iTunes and Spotify. Give us a rating and write us a comment. Thanks for listening.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.